The views and opinions expressed on the following program are not necessarily those of the staff and management of Salem Media of Hawaii.
Welcome to Hawaii's Tomorrow. Coming up today, Jeff meets with newsmakers, shares breaking news, spotlights top community activities and leaders. He'll keep you ahead of the news and informed as you make your way home today. So join Jeff Davis right here, right now, and every day at 5. So stay tuned and you'll have something to talk about over dinner tonight with Hawaii's Tomorrow today. That's Hawaii's Tomorrow today.
Aloha. I'm Carly Weiner, your Marine Science Gal on this Tuesday, September 10th. Today we will be highlighting the University of Hawaii Sea Grant, one of 32 programs nationally. Founded in 1968, UH Sea Grant works to promote better understanding, conservation, and use of coastal resources by supporting innovative research, extension, education, and communication services. But let's actually talk to the people that employ this on the ground. Up first with us today is Danielle Spirandelli. Danielle is an assistant professor of coastal policy and community development in the Department of Urban Regional Planning with a joint appointment at the Sea Grant program at the University of Hawaii Manoa. That is quite a mouthful. Welcome to the show, Danielle.
Thank you, Carly.
So tell us a little bit about what you do.
Well, like you mentioned, I am an assistant professor in the Department of Urban Regional Planning with a joint appointment in Sea Grant College Program. And my position there involves doing outreach activities, but also interdisciplinary research with a cluster of other faculty that also have joint appointments in the Sea Grant College.
And this is somewhat unique. Can you tell us a little bit about what actually is interdisciplinary research?
Well, I would say that interdisciplinary research involves various different academic researchers as well as experts that come from different fields and different disciplines doing work together on a particular problem.
Excellent. So what type of disciplines are you pulling from for your work?
We're pulling on various disciplines involving architecture. We've got the Department of Oceanography and the Center of Microbial Oceanography, two assistant professors from there, both Rosie and Craig Nelson. And Oceana Francis is in the Department of Civil Environmental Engineering. Wendy Maguro is in the School of Architecture. Michael Roberts is in the Department of Economics, and Mihana Vaughn is in the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Management.
And you personally, I know, do a lot of community work as well as urban development. How does that all come together in your research?
Well, the kind of research that I do looks at urbanization, both in terms of patterns of urbanization as well as the process of how we urbanize in different ways, and the implications for coastal ecosystems. And these have direct impacts on communities in a couple of ways. Most directly in terms of physical health, when we talk about microbial pollution, but then also in terms of social and mental health well-being, when places that we love and care about on the coast are we no longer have access to, but also in terms of spiritual well-being, in terms of being able to support our sustenance and subsistence practices. So, urban development has implications and impacts in all these different ways on communities. And the way that we develop is important for communities, but it also involves different kinds of interests and different kinds of stakes that people have in the way that we develop. And so trying to draw on how those different interests are involved directly implicates communities and community development.
That sounds like fascinating work. I bet you get to meet a lot of really interesting people doing what you do.
Yeah.
So what are some of the benefits and disadvantages? I mean, this isn't necessarily common, or this is somewhat of a new form of doing research. So how does this benefit your work? How is it difficult?
Well, I'd say some of the benefits for interdisciplinary work involves, you know, as our environment and our communities and the climate and especially urban areas are changing very rapidly, some of the problems that we're encountering are very complex. And it involves coming up with strategies and solutions that are difficult within these complex problems. And sometimes even just trying to define what the problem is means involving many different people with different disciplinary backgrounds. So the benefits for interdisciplinary research is drawing on both the natural sciences as well as the social sciences to be able to engage together, to be able to both define what these complex problems are, but then also to come up with solutions.
So do you work with a lot of community or state management as well to look at some of these solutions to the problems?
Well, I think that the work that we'll do as a group will be involving communities at the local level, but then also planners within counties, state decision makers, both, you know, with the DLNR, but also water resource, the commission water resources. I mean, so folks on all of different levels of government, as well as environmental organizations and activists. So all of these people have a stake in different in the way that coasts are impacted, and engaging those different communities is going to be key to finding solutions for the future.
And how? What got you first interested in this? I'm curious because your background is actually in landscape a little bit. Can you tell us a bit about that?
I have a master's in landscape architecture. I'd say that all of my the work that I've been doing up until now has always been with a very applied aspect. So trying to understand how environments change and landscapes and the way that we transform the built environment that affects the environment. And my early work was very site scale level with a design focus. And as I began to practice, I realized, well, when we apply a lot of these principles, particularly ecological principles in urbanizing regions, we don't necessarily understand how urbanizing environments work and what the implications are, particularly with ecosystem processes. And so that drew me into the realm of trying to understand that better, particularly with regard to patterns of urbanization.
So how does sustainability play into this work that you do with patterns of urbanization?
Sustainability, in terms of the way that I think about it, really involves how we think about the kinds of decisions that we make and the choices that we make, both at various different scales, at the built, the housing scales, the residential scale, our everyday choices and decisions, and then what the implications are for the long-term future. And we don't necessarily know what the answers are. Sometimes we do, but it's really hard to implement those. And a lot of that has to do, again, like as I was saying, that there are these trade-offs and different interests that are involved. And so when I think about sustainability, I think about bringing together these varying different kinds of interests and having people deliberate and discuss what those negotiate what those different interests are, but also bringing the science to the table as much as the science that we know, and allowing people to, communities to make decisions based on what we know up until then for the future.
So are there any areas in particular of sustainability, like wastewater infrastructures, or where do you plan on focusing with your work?
So my empirical work focuses more specifically on the way that we urbanize and the different kinds of patterns of urbanization. When I talk about patterns, I'm talking about the difference between clustered type development or compact development versus maybe more sprawling type development. Well, when we use those kinds of words, what are we actually talking about? Like, what does that actually mean? And so I measure what that is spatially across the landscape. And my more recent research is focused on what choices in wastewater infrastructure or water infrastructure, both at the central level as well as at the decentral, so sewers versus septics, for example, and how those choices are related to surrounding development patterns and what the implications are for ecosystems, specifically here in coastal ecosystems.
That sounds like such interesting work, and I want to hear all about how that relates to some of the other research going on with UH Sea Grant. But we're going to take a quick traffic break, and when we come back, we'll explore this issue a little bit more. I'd like to acknowledge some of our sponsors, R&R Solar and Rolf Chris, Edible Hawaiian Islands, Natural Energy Laboratory, Honolulu Weekly, and Sabrina's Restaurant.
760 KGU,
part of the Wall Street Business Network.
It's Wave Hawaii, young people connecting with young people, riding the wave of God's love, and sharing the story of Jesus. We're looking for young people between 16 and 25 years old to join our Wave Hawaii team. Check out our Wave Hawaii 2014 Youth Leadership Application Form at wavehawaii.org. Let God use your unique talent, drive, energy, and heart to help plan the next Rock the Ranch for Jesus at Kualoa Ranch, Saturday, January 4th. Check it out at wavehawaii.org, on Facebook at Wave Hawaii 05.
Aloha, the solar guy Jeff Davis here again. Do you want a free solar system? How about free 5 panels? How about a free trip to Vegas? How about free 15,000 Hawaiian miles? Oh, I know what you want. Free financing. Well, then don't call me. As the old saying goes, there is no free lunch. It's as easy as a phone call. Just give me a call, and we'll be talking about your photovoltaic or your solar hot water. You'll be getting an impeccable installation. We have a 10-year workmanship warranty. We don't subcontract. We've had an electrical license here on Oahu for 25 years. We don't have to cut corners on the quality of our equipment, and our pricing is unbeatable due to the fact that we have no overhead. I, the solar guy, will personally design your system by maximizing tax credits, often a 2-year process. By calling us, Kamiyama Solar Electric, and me personally, the solar guy, Jeff Davis, the only thing you'll get for free is Aloha. Give me a call, 554-7200, a solar guy at 554-7200, and I want to tell you, Aloha.
Marco Miushkovich here from Hawaii Money Resource. Join me every weekday at 2 to learn solid financial strategies that might help you protect your finances. Tune in to Hawaii Money Resource every day at 2, right here on 760 KGU.
Aloha. If you would like to work with Jeff and Kamiyana Solar in a sales position, Jeff is hiring qualified people for full or part-time positions. Please call Jeff at 554-7200. That's 554-7200.
Hi, I'm Frank Rogers from Leakmaster Roofing and the Cool Roof Store. We sell and install protective roof coatings for all types of roofs. What kind of roof do you have? For flat roofs, we recommend silicone roof coatings because they withstand unlimited ponding water and they come with a 50-year material warranty. We feature trusted names like Geico, NXT Cool Zone, and Apoc Silicone with some of the lowest prices in town. If you have a Monier roof or a metal roof, we recommend that you recoat them with NXT Cool Zone to make them shine like new. Asphalt shingles can be protected and waterproof for the lifetime of your home with the Cool Roof Store's ceramic coating. Whether you want Leakmaster Roofing to install the coating or want to do it yourself, come on down to our store in Kaka'ako or visit us at leakmaster.com. Why re-roof when you can simply recoat?
If you would like to join Jeff Davis and his guests on the air, call now at 296-5467. That's 296-5467. Now back to the Solar Guy.
You're listening to Hawaii's Tomorrow with Jeff Davis, the Solar Guy.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, I'm Carly Weiner, your marine science gal. And today we're talking with University of Hawaii Sea Grant staff and employees. With us now is Danielle Spirandelli, and she's sharing with us some of her amazing interdisciplinary work that she has been doing with Sea Grant. So, Danielle, you recently were hired on with the university, and it was part of this really unique cluster initiative. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So back in February 2011, the former Manoa Chancellor of Virginia, Hinshaw, she announced a university-wide strategic hiring initiative to increase a pool of scholars in teaching and research community. And she put out a competition where 11 other departments put together proposals, and it was the University of Hawaii's Sea Grant College Program that won this competition with their proposal entitled Integrating Marine Science, Economics, Engineering, Design, and Policy for Sustainable Coastal Communities. And so through this initiative, UH Sea Grant was able to hire seven new general funded faculty, with each faculty member having 75% of their position in their home department and then 25% of their appointment in UH Sea Grant. And the purpose of that is for interdisciplinary research, but then also to connect that research to outreach activities and connect the science to communities, decision makers, and policymakers.
So what kind of outreach activities does that entail?
Well, you know, a lot of it we're going to see, we're going to be developing. As you mentioned, it is a new initiative. Myself and two others came on board a year ago, and then four others came on board just this fall. So a lot of the outreach activities will engage one of the centers of excellence at UH Sea Grant called the Smart Building and Community Design. And so a lot of the effort will be involved with connecting our strategies and our decisions, our behaviors, as well as our built environment with energy, reducing energy uses and energy costs, whether it's either on campus or also elsewhere in Hawaii. And then also focus on water and water resources and the effects in coastal communities.
Excellent. So do you have current plans now to work with these other hired faculty on specific projects? Or are you guys going to kind of just powwow and see where it goes?
We do have currently have, I think right now it's an every, the last communication is every Wednesday, no, every, once a month on Wednesdays, get together and have drinks, you know, so we can,
that's a good way of doing
an informal dialogue and see where the synergies were really overlap. We believe that the research needs to overlap with the outreach, and so that will always be priority for both overlapping. So everything that we do as a group will have a connection with the community and with stakeholders.
Well, it sounds like an exciting initiative, and I'm super, super curious to see how it goes. Danielle, you've been a wealth of information. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Carly.
And moving from some new hires to some hires that have been around for a few years, or 10, we are going to now chat with Dolan Eversall. Dolan is a University of Hawaii Sea Grant Program Coastal Hazards Extension Agent, but also serves as the NOAA Coastal Storms Program Coordinator for the Pacific Islands region. You guys have really long job titles that make my job very difficult, but welcome to the show, Dolan.
Thank you, Carly.
So you cover a huge area with your work, Dolan. You work a little for NOAA, a little for Sea Grant. Tell us, what are you doing?
Yeah, I often say that I wear a couple hats at the university. My primary role is as an extension agent for our Sea Grant program. I've been an extension agent for about 10 years now, so that's my primary function. And maybe about 2.5, close to 3 years ago now, we had an opportunity to host a NOAA-funded hazards program. It's called the Coastal Storms Program, as you acknowledged. And this NOAA program, it's based out of Charleston, and we work very closely with our local NOAA office, Pacific Services Center, here in Honolulu. But as a NOAA program, we're hosting it at the University of Hawaii Sea Grant up in Manoa. And so I wear a regional coordinator hat in that respect. So as a regional coordinator, I work all over the Pacific, as you mentioned, and specifically the U.S.-affiliated Pacific Islands. So those are the freely associated states and territories within the Pacific Islands, and that's Guam, American Samoa, the Marshall Islands, Federated States of Micronesia, and the Commonwealth of the Northern Marianas. So my work takes me all over the Pacific. It's very exciting. It's very interesting. And part of the challenge with that, of course, is just getting around. And you can fly to all these places, but getting to some of the smaller islands involves small planes or even boats is the only way to get in. And in some places, they only have a boat once a week. So I've yet to really put myself that far out into the territory. Most of my work takes me into the capitals and working with government officials and things like that. But it's regionally very diverse and quite expansive in trying to cover the territories.
So is it just you, one person, working on this vast area?
Yeah, it's just me. No, I'm just – of course not. So I am the sole representative for the Pacific Islands region for coastal storms. But, of course, I can't do it all by myself. I have a lot of NOAA support through the Charleston office, East Coast colleagues that I work with on a regular basis. And then, of course, our local office here, our Pacific Services Center, it's located in downtown Honolulu. And they have a number of resources that I work with, and including geospatial analysts and people like me that are hazards folks that have a good understanding of the region and who needs what. So I do work closely with a lot of our NOAA partners. And then we have all the other partners out there as well. And I work very closely with the Army Corps of Engineers, the U.S. Geological Survey. There's a number of federal agencies like USAID, which is the international version of FEMA. And a lot of people don't realize it, but the U.S. is doing work all over the world every day, in addition to international partners like the World Bank and organizations like that that fund climate change and hazard preparedness type work. So I work with a lot of different stakeholders all over the region.
So you mentioned hazards, and I want to dive a little bit deeper into this. What are some of the biggest coastal hazards that we face here to our communities in Hawaii?
Yeah, of course, Hawaii is part of my region, and this is where I live, so I'm very familiar with the hazards here, and I've been working with coastal hazards for a number of years. That's a good question as far as, like, the number one hazard. It's hard to put your finger on any one hazard.
You can give us the top five.
Yeah, I'll give you my short list of hazards, I guess. There's been a lot of preparation and planning for a catastrophic hurricane in Hawaii, and probably a worst-case scenario would be a Category 4 or larger, a very large, strong hurricane having a direct hit to Honolulu, our major urban center. Almost all of our commerce, shipping, transportation is based out of Honolulu, so it would affect the entire state if we were to get a direct hit like that. I've been involved in our Coastal Storms Program has actually funded some modeling work looking at futuristic scenarios of coastal inundation from hurricane and tsunamis in the future with sea level raised. So we have some futuristic look at inundation zones. Our existing tsunami and hurricane evacuation zones when you raise sea level and see what that looks like. These maps are understandably dramatic, and they have a very far-reaching, inland-reaching inundation zone. But again, they are kind of a futuristic worst-case scenario. So taking that type of information into account, I guess I would say hurricanes are probably our largest threat to the state because they can have such far-reaching impact and affect so many people all at the same time. Followed closely by my second list of coastal hazards here in Hawaii would be tsunami, of course. We have a long history of tsunamis in Hawaii. We're very vulnerable from all directions, but we seem to be particularly vulnerable to tsunamis that originate from our north in the Aleutian Islands in Alaska and the Russian Kamchatka Peninsula. So those would be my top two. I could keep going down my list, but it would get too long, I think. But I'd say hurricanes and then tsunamis would be our biggest threats.
Well, I'd like to dive a little bit more into some coastal hazards and maybe explore even your top five, but I want to take a quick break for traffic. And when we come back, we'll get to talk a little bit more about some of these tsunami and hurricane hazards. I'd like to acknowledge some of our sponsors, Leak Master Roofing, Kamayama Solar, Grand Solar, BenQ Solar, University of Hawaii Research Corporation, and State of Hawaii Natural Energy Lab.
760 KGU,
part of the Wall Street Business Network.
If you're leaving to the east side from town, we've got slow traffic on the 820 eastbound at the end of the Kahala Viaduct. No problems to the windward side, looking pretty normal on the Pali, the Likelike, and the H3. If you're going west, typical, the Moanalua slows at Four Chapter Flats, the H1 slows at the airport exit on the viaduct. Inbound traffic from the west is slow from Middle Street to Ward Avenue.
Aloha. This is a solar daughter, Lena Davis. My dad, the solar guy, Jeff Davis, has been telling me to listen to him my whole life. It's helped me, and I'm sure it'll help you, too. Be sure to listen to My Dad, the Solar Guy, 5 to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday on 760 KGU. Aloha.
Aloha. It's your solar guy, Jeff Davis. You know, I'm offering you folks a chance to get an education, this time about on-bill financing. You've heard about the new bill the governor signed, paying for your photovoltaic system on your electricity bill. As you may know, the governor just signed this revolutionary bill, and it is directed and aimed at folks that have no ability to find the upfront money for their photovoltaic purchase. If you have questions, you can always call me or attend my seminar. Get a hold of me at 554-7200. That's 554-7200. And aloha.
So you're doing the right thing. You're getting a solar voltaic system for your home or business, but did you know the crucial decision is which microinverter to choose? A microinverter is what's going to convert the sunshine from your solar panels into electricity you can use.
But not all microinverters are created equal.
The Enexis microinverter system dramatically boosts energy harvest with higher wattage microinverters. We're talking up to 40% over its competitors. Year after year, you'll be getting more bang for your buck.
Because not all microinverters are created equal.
So make sure your contractor offers the Enexis microinverter with the system you can monitor yourself. Your system will shine today and be ready for a brilliant tomorrow. For more information, visit enexis.com. That's enexis.com. E-N-E-C-S-Y-S.com. That's E-N-E-C-S-Y-S.com.
Aloha, it's Jeff. Is it hotter in your home than out on your lanai? Do you wish there was an energy-efficient way to cool down? Wouldn't it be nice to turn on the trays at the flip of a switch? Well, my friends at Island Cooling have been quietly promoting the energy-efficient whole house fan for years. It works by drawing fresh air through your home, pushing the hot air out through your attic. Call the whole house fan experts at Island Cooling, 672-2300, 672-2300, or go to islandcooling.com. Aloha.
This is Chief Louis Kealoha of the Honolulu Police Department. As part of the HPD's Safer Roads program, our officers are enforcing traffic laws 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. But we need your help. A few common sense choices can make a big difference. Stay within posted speed limits, use a hands-free cell phone device when driving, look out for pedestrians, and have a designated driver if you drink. Together, we can make Oahu's road safer and save lives. Aloha.
If you would like to join Jeff Davis and his guests on the air, call now at 296-5467. That's 296-5467. Now back to the Solar Guy.
You're listening to Hawaii's Tomorrow with Jeff Davis, the Solar Guy.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, I'm Carly Weiner, and I'm the Marine Science Gal for today, talking with Dolan Eversole. And we're talking about, well, we were talking about the top five coastal hazards, but more importantly, we know what some of these hazards are. What I'd like to know, Dolan, is what exactly does your program do? I know Coastal Storms Program does a lot of planning. What goes into all of this?
Yeah, good question. So the Coastal Storms Program, it's a NOAA program. And it's regional, so we're working in the Pacific Islands region for the next couple of years. We've been in operation here in the Pacific Islands for about 2 years. So we have a maybe 4 to 5 year window with this program before it moves on to the next region. So they're already ramping up efforts in the Great Lakes, which is the next region. They're hiring the two new coordinators for the Great Lakes, and they'll be doing what I'm doing in the Pacific Islands for the Great Lakes. So the program is not a permanent program. It's more of a bridging program. And what it's meant to do is identify gaps and needs and try to fill those gaps either with funding or resources or, you know, maps, data, information, people, capacity building, essentially, before it moves on. So there's a really discrete window in which the coordinator's real active, busy trying to find partnerships. And that's where I'm at right now, is building those partnerships. And the idea with this program is, I mentioned it's a bridging program. It's meant to build bridges, not literally, but figuratively, right? Be partnerships and associations. And then when it leaves to go to the next region, those affiliations and partnerships stay in place. And this is why it's a very great fit for our Sea Grant program to be part of this. And historically, the Coastal Storms program has affiliated itself with Sea Grant programs around the nation. So we're one of 32 Sea Grant programs. I think, Danielle, you mentioned that. And each of the Coastal Storms programs typically will associate with a Sea Grant program because of our experience working with community partners. So in addition to building bridges and partnerships, we also have a funding program. We just concluded our request for proposals, and we've identified and actually are in the process of awarding six projects, a total of $1 million. So roughly, you know, $150,000, $200,000 for each project around the region, looking at community resilience and coastal hazards in particular. We have a couple of projects here in Hawaii that we're funding, in addition to other projects around the region. One of which I'm very interested to see the outcome of is a disaster recovery plan for the county of Maui. So Maui County wrote a successful proposal and are going to get some funding to look at their rules and ordinances specifically on, not if, but when a disaster happens, how do they want to that community to rebuild? And there's already some opportunity to look at areas that they of their community that they don't like the way it is now, and maybe there's an opportunity to rebuild or not rebuild, or rebuild differently. So those are the kind of things that we're looking at funding, in addition to typical geospatial acquisition and acquiring aerial photos and digital elevation maps and things like that that we're providing funding for, including one of which is a new series, a new map viewer for sea level rise. And this is a NOAA-funded program, primarily funded through our Coastal Storms program, but as part of a larger national effort. NOAA is developing, and they're pretty much done with this now, a series of sea level rise maps for the entire nation. And so you can Google NOAA sea level rise, and you'll see, you'll be directed to this site that you can now click on Hawaii. We've done Hawaii, Guam, and the Commonwealth of the Northern Marianas are completed. And you can zoom in to any of the islands of Hawaii and see what sea level rise looks like. It's a Google map base map, so you recognize these images if you're familiar with Google. And you have a slider bar on the left-hand side of this viewer, and you can slide it up to 6 feet of sea level rise. So you really get a visual representation of what the future may look like in some of these areas.
Now, as we were chatting on the traffic break, as I understand it, these maps are fresh online, and this is actually brand new, maybe the first release of this information. So these maps are going to be very helpful. What else do you plan to do with these maps?
Another good question. Yeah, so these maps are brand new. They are not even officially announced yet, so I'm probably breaking some kind of protocol here. But
it's all good.
They are publicly available, so they are online now, and people are encouraged to go check them out. But the utility really comes in for planners and decision makers and public officials. And that's really where we're focusing our outreach efforts, as we're encouraging community members to take a look at these maps and understand what they mean. But I think their utility comes in for planners. And we're targeting them specifically with a series of outreach workshops around the state. The first of which is going to be coming up in Kona on September 19th as part of the annual planning conference, the Hawaii Congress of Planning Officials. We're going to be rolling out a workshop there specifically targeting the planning community that attends this annual workshop or annual conference. So we are planning to roll out some outreach so that the planning community understands these maps, what are their utility. These maps are not going to tell us that we shouldn't necessarily build in a certain area, but they're going to caution our elected officials that we should be very careful how and what we build in some of these low-lying areas. And we were just talking about this on the ride to the studio today, that you know these maps are very informative and they have a lot of utility, but they, in my mind at least, they kind of point to the obvious, which is low-lying areas will flood in the future because of sea level rise. I think most people understand that. It's intuitive. And if you look at really low elevation areas around the state, I think people, they already know that this is coming. But now we have a map that is, we're able to visualize that and maybe make some plans and policies around that. They're not meant to, these maps are not meant specifically to for geotechnical reasons or, you know, where do you locate your building on a particular plot of land. They're more regional. And what I mean by that is they're zoom limited. You can only zoom in so far. So you're not going to be able to zoom in right to your house, but you'll be able to zoom into your neighborhood and you'll be able to see roughly where the line is, whether you're in or out of projected sea level rise. But they're, at this point, the resolution is not there because of uncertainty associated with the, you know, methodology of developing these maps, that we're not comfortable yet in using it as a planning tool for a land use planner to zoom in and go, aha, you're inside the zone. There are other agencies like FEMA that do that, and they do flood mapping with a specific methodology for insurance.
Well, I mean, these maps, too, have huge implications. So you say low-lying areas, but if we look at Honolulu, our airport and all of Waikiki is in these flood zones, correct?
That's right.
So, I mean, that has huge implications for economics, for jobs, for tourism, for all kinds of things. So this isn't just whether you're in or out. This has huge implications.
Yeah, and there's a lot of interest in looking, and we're doing some of this work now, and looking at the socioeconomic impacts. So I mentioned we have these maps. We have futuristic maps of sea level rise and tsunami and hurricane even. And as part of that study, we've done an inventory of what kind of critical infrastructure is located in this newly defined zone. And you're right, there's all of our major infrastructure is right in the middle of it. We have airports, harbors, power plants, wastewater treatment. All of the really important stuff that we rely on is right in this zone. So it begs the question of, now what? And that's where we're at, is we've identified some vulnerabilities, and the next step is working with our planning officials and our coastal zone management program and other agencies and trying to identify reasonable steps forward.
So you talk a lot about planning, Dolan, but what about prevention?
Yeah, prevention. That's an intimate part of community resilience. You know, we throw out these buzzwords all the time, but I think people will understand that you really can't be a resilient community unless you're prepared for some hazards. That's another area of a focus area for our Coastal Storms program and our Sea Grant program as well, as we have a lot of expertise dealing with hazard mitigation and planning and preparedness. And some of those include developing guidebooks for homeowners on things that you can do to prepare your house. These are all available on our website as well. We have also developed a number of documents and guidance documents talking about what climate change will mean in the future to our environment and to our economies. So we have a lot of interest in this. We work very closely with our civil defense and our county emergency management agencies on annual hazard preparedness fairs. So these are just some of the examples of where we're engaging local communities on things, you know, educating them on things that they can do to be better prepared. And many of you have already heard this repeatedly, you know, get a kit, prepare, know where your evacuation shelter is. I think a lot of people don't realize that we do have a shelter shortage here in Hawaii. So in the event of a major hurricane, we don't have enough shelter space for people. So that's why people are encouraged to harden their home because you're going to be a lot more comfortable in your own home if it's, you know, worthy. And, you know, just simple things like knowing where you're going to go, knowing where your family would go, because the phones probably won't work.
Great. One more thing for me to worry about. Well, as someone who does get really nervous about these hazards, I think it's very reassuring to know that there are very competent people out there helping to do these planning and preventions. And I know definitely this hurricane season was trying to get my stuff together last second with Hurricane Flossie. And so I think that's kind of a good warning sign for everybody. So we're going to take a quick traffic break. And when we come back, we are going to move on to talk with Liz Kamabe about Hanama Bay. And as a great transition from sea level rise and hazards to Hanama Bay, this Thursday, we actually have a guest speaker talking about sea level rise. But we will chat about that after this traffic break. I'd like to acknowledge some of our sponsors, D.R. Horton Schuller, University of Hawaii Federal Credit Union, and Hank's Taxi Service.
760 KGU,
part of the Wall Street Business Network.
No problems going east from town except for a brief slowdown approaching Ainakoa at the east end of the airport viaduct, as usual. Windward commute is normal. Going west, the H1 slows at the airport on-ramp on the viaduct. The Moanalua slows at Fort Shafter Flats. Inbound traffic from the west is slow from Middle Street to the Ward Avenue bottleneck. No new accidents or stalls are reported.
If you would like to contact Jeff either about the program or have any other questions about solar photovoltaics or hot water, call 554-7200. That's 554-7200.
Over the past century, more than 90% of koa forests in Hawaii have disappeared as tropical hardwood prices have skyrocketed. Hawaii's koa forests are an important part of our ecosystem and a symbol of our island heritage. Hawaiian Legacy Hardwoods and Hawaii's Tomorrow need your help to repopulate 1,000 acres on the Big Island with new koa trees. For $60, you can sponsor your very own koa legacy tree on the slopes of Mauna Kea. Legacy trees can honor an individual, commemorate an event, or memorialize a loved one. Along with a beautifully engraved personalized certificate, $20 will also be donated to the charity or organization of your choice. Gift a gift that grows grander year after year. And see how simple the act of planting a tree can change the face of the planet. To plant your Hawaiian Koa Legacy Tree, go to hawaiistomorrow.com and click on the Legacy Tree icon. Again, hawaiistomorrow.com. That's Hawaii's with an S, tomorrow.com.
Aloha, it's your solar guy, Jeff Davis, with a sure bet for you and your family. If you or someone you know believes they are living in a neighborhood that has no room on the grid to install more photovoltaics to erase your electricity bill, I can do it. I will guarantee to get your home approved by HECO, or I'll give you $100. Again, if you need PV on your home and you're under the impression that your neighborhood or your grid is full to saturation, I, Jeff Davis, the solar guy, can get your home installed and connected to HECO's net metering program, or I'll give you a $100 call-up bill. You just call me, the solar guy, Jeff Davis, at 554-7200, 554-7200. Aloha.
If you're unhappy with the high prices or the way you've been treated by mainland corporations, get rid of them. Let Hank's Tax Service help you. Hank and his employees have been preparing taxes in Hawaii for close to 20 years. The sharpest preparers from Hank's 2 decades of unparalleled tax service have rejoined him to serve you, not make money for a mainland corporation. If you're paying over $200, you're paying way too much. Get rid of that mainland corporation and come to Hank's. Hank's Tax Service, 853-1170. 853-1170.
If you would like to join Jeff Davis and his guests on the air, call now at 296-5467. That's 296-5467. Now back to the Solar Guy.
You're listening to Hawaii's Tomorrow with Jeff Davis, the Solar Guy.
Welcome back. We're now going to chat with Elizabeth Kamabe, the education leader for the University of Hawaii Sea Grant Hanama Bay Education Program and Sea Grant Environmental Education Extension Agent. Yet again, another Sea Grant person with an extremely long title. Welcome to the show, Liz.
Thanks, Carly.
So, Liz, you've been at Hanama Bay for quite some time now. Tell us a little bit about the education program there.
Well, the education program at Hanama Bay, as many people know, started in 1990 with a University of Hawaii Sea Grant, taking on the role of trying to educate visitors that come to Hanama Bay. In 1990, there were up to 3 million people a year coming to Hanama Bay. And this is just a small effort with community grassroots and Sea Grant partnering together to try to get some education to people so that they could take a better care of their environmental footprint that they do at the bay.
But you guys do a lot more than just the education video with the little turtle in the beginning. You have quite a lot of programs and lecture series going on. Tell us a bit about that.
Okay. Since 1990, we've had the opportunity to grow the program. And so it's been just a wonderful opportunity to use Hanama Bay as a, what do we call it, an environmental education resource for the community, for the schools, trying to invite our residents back to Hanama Bay. So we do outreach for schools. We do a lot of stewardship. The bridging of lecture series, trying to get our community to learn a little bit more about the type of research that's going on that affects the Bay.
But you have an amazingly dedicated staff and volunteer base there at the Bay. I mean, there are regulars that come to your Thursday evening lectures every single week, year after year after year. It must feel really good to be working with the same people and have such a stronghold in the community.
You know, the Hanama Bay Education Program is something that I think Sea Grant is very proud of. It has become a national, what do we call that? National point of interest for the National Sea Grant College Program. It's their best, one of their best practices that they do. And yes, we've had a wonderful team there. I certainly don't do it by myself. There's just under 800,000 people that visit Hanama Bay every year, and the education program is to try to educate each and every one of them before they go down to the beach, before they use the resources of Hanama Bay, to get them a little bit more of an idea of what's going on, what kind of impact they do, making it a little bit better place before they leave the place. I think that we have a core of about 100 people, but maybe about 140 volunteers that pass through our program each year. We have 7 full-time staff and 3 undergraduate staff. So it's a full-time job there, and it's actually a very exciting place to be.
Yeah, and you guys recently, too, in the last couple years, have not just focused on educating the visitors that go to the beach, but you've branched out a little bit about educating the community about the specialness and the history of that place. And I know you've developed some really unique field trips. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I think an important thing that we've tried to do with Hanama Bay lately is to try to keep up with the different education strategies. So multimedia, and using education technology to try to reach out a little bit further than just the face-to-face talk. Face-to-face talk, of course, is still a very efficient way of getting our point across. But everybody that wants to come to Hanama Bay obviously can't, because it would just be way too many people. So we're trying to branch out with virtual field trips now. And I think a really important way to do it, as a local kid myself, I love stories, and I love stories about a place. And once you start to learn about a place, then you start to perhaps take a little bit more chance to care about a place. So we're bringing the stories of Hanama Bay. It's not just Hanama. It is all the place names that are involved with the place, the legends that are involved with Hanama Bay, and trying to not just do it in a talk story way, but to try to bring it to life virtually.
And you're not just interested in the stories of Hanama Bay. I know you're helping to lead a project that's looking even further past into some Hawaiian language newspapers. What does that project involve? Okay.
That project is certainly near and dear to my heart. the Hawaiian language newspapers. About 8 or 10 years ago, I worked with Dr. Puakea Nogomaya, or I was introduced to the Hawaiian language newspaper archive by Dr. Nogomaya, and he is with the Hawaii Nui Akea School of Hawaiian Knowledge in the Hawaiian language department there. We found out that there is a huge archive of newspaper, Hawaiian language newspaper, that's extends back to the 1840s all the way up to about the 1940s. And within this treasure trove, there is all kinds of stories of fisheries management, how people fished, fishing nets, everything you can think of, because that was their way of communicating. Back in the mid-1800s, if you can believe it, the Native Hawaiian population was the most literate, or one of the most literate in the world. So they all read the newspaper. They all used this as a major way of communicating.
Wow, that's amazing. And so how far has this research gone? You know, what are your plans for the future?
That's a really good question. Although I talk about it like we've done so much with this, there is still so much more to do. There's a lot more newspaper to translate. There's a lot more paper to digitize. Digitize, I mean, not just have it on PDF or have it on a microfiche. It certainly is. Nowadays, everybody wants something text searchable, right? When you look for something, or you want to find out about your family, or you want to find out about the place you live, whether it's Kailua or Mauna Lua area, you want to search for that name. You don't necessarily want to go through it page by page. And that's the work that still needs to be done. I obviously it's not within my abilities to be able to do that. I help to manage the projects so that Dr. Nogomaya and his wonderful team of graduate students can actually translate these things and actually bring it to fruition.
I can imagine that is a huge undertaking. That's going to take a lot of time, but something that will be very worthwhile. Mm-hmm. You do so many projects with the community and with educating about place. What is your favorite thing about what you do?
My favorite thing? Wow. That's
or you can give a top five list like Dolan did.
Well, I noticed Dolan, yeah, he stopped at two, though.
But. Okay, well, two.
Well, the thing that got me interested in environmental education and marine education is really bringing everything to life, bringing the stories of Hawaii to life so that people will learn to care about the areas they are. They'll be proud of where they're from and be able to care for it for the future. And I think that starts off with starting to look. For me, it was looking at the ocean, loving the ocean, loving every aspect of it. Tide pooling is like my most favorite thing to do, of course, and being able to take that close look at it.
That's wonderful, and having mm-hmm. that ability and sharing that passion with everybody through programs like the Thursday Evening Lecture mm-hmm. Series, which I have to plug because Kosi Island Earth is partnering with Hanama Bay this month, and we are hosting all the lectures every Thursday. They're free to the public, and you guys have this not just this month, but every single mm-hmm. month, and it's parking is free, 6:30, and it's been going on for quite some time.
We started in about, I would say in 2000, we felt a need to try to share some of the research that was going on at the university with Hawaii communities that are affected by this research. And so we were doing a monthly lecture at the Hawaii Kai Library. And then in 2002, the education program started their weekly talks. And at that time, we were able to bring in quite a loyal following audience.
Well, it's a great program, and I encourage our listeners to come this Thursday to hear about sea level, which we touched on today. Liz, thank you so much. It's great to hear about the amazing work you do. I want to take a moment to thank all of our guests who could join us here today. We've gotten the opportunity to learn about some of the great work going on at the University of Hawaii Sea Grant Program. I'd like to give a special thank you to Jeff Davis, Kosi Island Earth, and the Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology. I'm Carly Weiner. Thanks for listening. Now get out there and enjoy the ocean planet.